we need to acknowledge the feelings and not push them away, because as we know, feelings will return and deepen and darken if we don't acknowledge them, name them, and sit with them.
Again, we're building this sense of agency and of I matter. And even as a young person, my feelings matter, my actions matter, and I can make a difference.
Action is so important, you know, being able to participate, do things at my level, and then be able to be part of Earth Rangers, to be able to bring this to help other people who have been in a similar situation themselves.
Hello, and welcome to the Earthy Chats podcast, where we're cross-pollinating environmental education ideas. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Harvey-Berrell. I'm joining you as the Outreach and Events Manager for the Columbia Basin Environmental Education Network, or CBEEN, and the Outdoor Learning Store, which is your one-stop shop for outdoor learning, equipment and resources. I also run Stoked On Science. It's an environmental education and consultancy business based in the Interior Mountains of BC.
And I'm your other host, Ian Shanahan, the General Editor of Green Teacher, an environmental education charity that produces a quarterly magazine, books, webinars, PD, and the podcast, Talking with Green Teachers.
Let's get started.
Maybe they should be actually instigating a conversation with their child about what's going on and why and what we can do about it. But rather than do that, they might be more likely to avoid it because they just don't feel like they have the tools and the experience to deal with whatever emotions their child might express. And so both the course and the parent guide are really meant to alleviate some of that anxiety about talking about anxiety that adults might feel and give them some really kind of easy to use tools. You know, I was thinking about something that came up earlier in our conversation.
Well, hello and welcome to this edition of Earthy Chats. I'm Jade Berrell, joining you from the traditional unceded territories of the Snaiaxed, all trout people, also known, loved, cherished, fished, hunted and cared for by the Shkwepmik Shuswap Lakes people, the Okanagan Silks to the south and the Tanaha. I can say wait, yaya sweet, gesa gisquiet, gabiniskis, hello to everyone and welcome to the podcast. Joining us today are some fantastic humans from Earth Rangers. We have Erin Sperling. Erin is a white settler on Turtle Island in Toronto. She is a teacher educator in science and environmental education at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education, OISE, at the University of Toronto, where she earned her PhD in 2020. She's been a board member of Earth Rangers since 2018. Our second guest today is Stephanie Doyle. Stephanie also has a PhD and is living in Chugage on traditional and unceded Gayungahaga territory. She has over 16 years experience in the field of education. And prior to joining Earth Rangers in 2022, she was a teacher educator and researcher at the Higher National Institute of Teaching and Education at the Université de Rennes en France, in France. Welcome. And last but absolutely not least, joining us is Tova Barakas. Tova is the president of Earth Rangers and co-authored a white paper in 2021 on eco-anxiety in kids and outlined a list of compelling recommendations to address this growing issue. A 2022 Clean 50 Emerging Leader Award recipient, Tova also serves on both the Ontario Parks Board of Directors and the Board of Directors for Project Learning Tree Canada. Well, welcome to all three of you. I mean, what an introduction. Incredibly knowledgeable humans. So excited to have you here. So we are here to talk sort of about eco-anxiety and that sort of framework. But to get an understanding of who you are and what brought you to this space, I wonder if you might share a little bit about whether you were kind of an Earth Ranger type person growing up, or did you come to it? I'm going to just start in order of my screen. So I'm going to go with you, Stephanie.
Okay. Well, for me, I grew up in Nova Scotia and I spent a lot of time outdoors. So hiking, camping, everything outdoors. And I was a member of Girl Guides. And I remember being told, when you go into nature, take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints. And that's something that stuck with me all these years. And it's something that I've always been really, really sensitive to be careful about the impact we have on nature when we go out into nature.
a strong connection there. How about you, Erin? Are you an Earth Ranger since birth, if not by work?
It's a good question. I think it's important for eco-educator folks to think about where the spark started. And similar to Stephanie, also was a Girl Guide. It's funny that came to my mind. But grew up north of Toronto in a small city called Barrie. And just, I was always the kid who was out like chasing butterflies and looking at frogs, and grew up with parents who just really encouraged me to do that. And I think at a certain point, it just became part of my DNA. And I remember my high school graduation, you know, when you talk about what you want to be when you grow up, mine said a female version of David Suzuki. So I haven't quite attained that, and I may never, because for lots of different reasons, but I'm happy to be here to speak today. Thank you.
Well, that's wonderful. And looks like some of the things you've achieved, you're paving a good path. I think you're doing fantastic work. And Tova, how about you?
Well, I think I'm going to be the odd person out here. I grew up in Miami, so spent a lot of time outdoors, but not a lot of time actually in nature. Kind of thinking back, a lot more time playing tennis, definitely time at the beach, but more at the pool. Really wasn't until I moved to Toronto to go to the University of Toronto that I really kind of discovered the wilderness and going out hiking and doing more things in nature. And that's where my love for it really developed, was when I moved to Canada.
Totally. I grew up in quite an urban environment as well. And there were little trips, but I was definitely more sports and recreation as opposed to nature until I went to university myself. Yeah. And went on a field trip, and we were staying in huts in Iceland with sleeping bags on wooden benches. And I was like, okay, where is the bed? Where is the hotel? You know, I was quite naive. And it took me a while to grow into my love of camping and being cold at night and things. So it can come from anywhere. Okay, so maybe, Tova, I'll stick with you and I'll work my way back up. But what is Earth Rangers? What do you guys do?
So Earth Rangers is the Kids Conservation Organization. It's a Canadian charity, although we've actually just expanded into the United States as well, really focused on engaging and empowering elementary age kids. So kids between the ages of 6 and 12, to not only appreciate, you know, nature and biodiversity and the environment, but to play an active role in protecting it. So it's really about empowerment and giving kids the tools that they need to make a difference, to see the impact of their actions, and to feel hopefully a lot more optimistic and in control of their futures. You know, that's kind of the broad explanation in terms of what we actually do. We have a number of programs, but two main ones. One is a live school assembly that goes into elementary schools across Canada, really highlighting, you know, biodiversity, different conservation initiatives, young scientists and Indigenous guardians working in the field to protect species. And it's really inspirational. So at the end of the show, we ask the students, you know, who here wants to be an Earth Ranger? And they all raise their hands, and we know we've done our job that day. And, you know, to be an Earth Ranger, you just sign up for a free membership, which you can access through the Earth Rangers app. And through there, you can find a lot of resources and activities that are all aimed at protecting the environment. And so it's not a game. You only spend so much time kind of on screen, but you go out into the real world to complete your environmental missions and then report back and earn points and level up. So it's really fun and engaging for that age group.
Totally. And the website and the app, that, you know, the visuals are very engaging. It's sort of gamifying education in a way, because they feel like they're on an adventure and on a quest as they do it. And it's so enriching for them. Erin, how did you get involved with Earth Rangers?
I think I was approached by the previous president, Peter Kendall, several years ago to be involved doing some work as a consultant for the education side of things. And it somehow morphed into me being a board member. And so I sort of take up the space providing educational consultancy from a board perspective. So, you know, talking about what's happening in schools, what's happening for teachers, curriculum, and so on, and how we as Earth Rangers can try and integrate some of these challenges.
That seems amazing, because I know that there's a lot of work where this can be done in the family unit. And some of the work you've done on eco-anxiety has been really to connect parents into how to cope with this as well. But there is obviously this amazing work you're doing here that connects to curriculum and into the more formal education system. And so it's really amazing to see an organization doing that really well. Stephanie, how did you wander into the Earth Rangers?
Well, I'm the most recent member of Earth Rangers here. But I've arrived as the education programs manager. So I'm working on, just kind of like you just said, developing resources for K-6 educators, so different kinds of resources and programs, and both in English and in French. So we have, for example, on our website, Earth Rangers Homeroom, which has different activities that can be used by educators in the classroom or in another context. And it will be available in French in the fall, Ma Classe Eco.
Oui, très bien.
And then working on the Eco Anxiety to Eco Action micro credential, which is something that we're really proud of and that is really, really filling a gap for educators to help deal with this topic in the classroom. Yeah.
Amazing. And we'll delve into that a little bit later. So can you give me a little bit of an understanding, Tova, of how many people are engaged with Earth Rangers or how it's changed over time? Because I feel like you've got quite the large sort of following or community, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So as an organization, we have about 40 staff, but the reach is really a lot bigger than that. We have about 325,000 members and alumni across Canada. And alumni is key. You know, we're actually just starting to see that we're hiring people now who used to be Earth Rangers. And that's a new, but very, very rewarding, as I'm sure you can imagine.
That's so fantastic. That is, you know, evidence-based that this educational work creates stewardship and creates connection to these sort of issues through their lives. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as an organization, we've just really over the last few years tried to focus on even just this kind of shift to really developing our programs with a lens on eco anxiety and transforming that into eco action. I think we always did it, but not specifically or with intention. And, you know, over the last number of years, we just started hearing more and more from our members how they're feeling about the environment, you know, some of their concerns, some of their fears, some of their confusion about what they hear. And so, you know, what's really changed is just that every time we develop a program, we really develop it with that in mind. Like, are we just talking about the problems or are we offering some kind of a solution, some kind of an engagement mechanism, some kind of a way for kids to actually get involved? And so that's really critical to the direction of the organization, whether it's in schools or at home with educators, with parents. It's all about, you know, learning combined with action. And then also really focused on trying to do a better and better job at measuring the impact of that action and really trying to hone in on, you know, how do we create change long term that's really kind of sustainable.
That's amazing. And I know that a lot of people in the sort of professional development world are talking about how really to embed change, you have to do repeated learning. You have to go over it again and again. And sometimes, and we see this, you know, a lot of our work in the store and the professional development we do is linked to climate change and sustainability because it's integral when we're doing anything connected into the outdoors. And we are seeing more and more reports about eco-anxiety, and that's from educators, from students and the general population. Whenever I talk about it, I did a climate science degree. It was quite dark.
Yeah.
A lot of it didn't come out super mystic at that time because we were still facing a lot of backlash from the media and a lot of backlash from industry, which I'm not saying has been removed. But what I have seen in the work that you're doing and that I see this now with that repeated message of you can take some agency. There are solutions that we can do, both big and small, from a bottom-up scenario, making choices ourselves, and then with communicating up to the top with legislators and decision makers. And it does make a difference. And I also am seeing, I'm scared when I see children who are upset and worried about these things. Like it's obviously really hurtful. But I also see with tools like the work that you're doing to support them, that fear is shifted into action and a desire for change and to be a decision maker and to move forward. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, totally. And it's a different, like, one of the things that we think a lot about is age appropriateness of certain actions and behaviors that, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of attention paid to climate, like youth climate activism, which is so inspiring and important, but also not appropriate for a younger age group and not even really accessible to them in terms of like what they're able to do, how they're able to express themselves. And so what Earth Rangers has really tried to focus on is specifically that, you know, elementary age, understanding that they just don't have as much agency. So we need to really provide them with that.
Amazing. All of the resources featured in this podcast, plus many more, for students and educators alike, can be found online at the Outdoor Learning Store. Visit www.outdoorlearningstore.ca to view what's on offer. From waterproof notepads to binoculars and dip nets to sit pads, the store has you covered to take your learning outside. In addition, there are educator resource books to help you take your outdoor education to the highest level. That's www.outdoorlearningstore.ca, we're Canada's non-profit resource store. For those who aren't aware, you completed some research and a big survey, and can you share it that was sort of linked into eco-anxiety? Can you share some of those results?
Yes, absolutely. So we conducted a pretty significant survey at the end of 2020 with 4,000 people. So four groups, 1,000 Earth Rangers members, so kids between the ages of 6 and 11, 1,000 parents of Earth Rangers members, then 1,000, we call them Gen Pop, but basically Canadian kids between the ages of 6 and 11 who are not members of Earth Rangers, and 1,000 parents of kids 6 to 11 who are not members of Earth Rangers. And then we compared their reported kind of feelings about the environment, so knowledge, feelings, and reported actions, to develop what we've called the Eco Anxiety and Eco Action Index. And so it kind of takes these different groups, compares how they're feeling. I mean, what we found from a really high level is just that kids who are members of Earth Rangers are, yes, more concerned about the environment, but also much more likely to be doing something about it. And one of the conclusions through like the analysis of the research, but also looking at like a literature review of other research that's been done on eco-anxiety, was that some level of concern for the environment is healthy if it translates into action and not apathy or disengagement.
Totally. And so I found that really interesting that, yes, more aware, perhaps these Earth Rangers kids who are connected into this, but also feel like potentially they have better capability to dive in and make some change. Erin, I'm wondering, and I feel like we can talk about this a little bit, but when we have these tough feelings, I'm always very keen to accept them and to say that it's totally okay, you know, to acknowledge that fear and upset, and to say that it's okay to be worried. But do you have some ideas about some key ways that we can overcome those tough feelings and shift the perspective into a little bit more positive or optimistic, perhaps?
Well, I mean, some of the things...
maybe small questions. Just fix, you know, modern psychology.
And to be fair, we've already really touched on a lot of this stuff, and a lot of what the research is talking about naming the feelings. And the thing is, we could talk about this from a lot of different perspectives. We could talk about it from a psychology perspective, a child development perspective. We could talk about it from an intersectionality perspective in terms of who are the folks that are showing up with the feelings, and what kinds of bodies and genders and so on, which is maybe more for another day. But I think what, like you said, Jade, we need to acknowledge the feelings and not push them away, because as we know, feelings will return and deepen and darken if we don't acknowledge them, name them, and sit with them. And so some of the work I do with my students, teacher candidates, undergraduates, and even in just in my work in community is, I mean, starting with ourselves, our feelings, with things like mindfulness activities, with going out into nature and just being present and breathing and coming into some sort of relaxation, which I think can sound like, why are we just sitting and breathing when we have these, you know, major urgent crises to sit with? But in fact, for those of us who identify as activists, or just those of us everyday Gen Pop who, you know, are moving through the world having difficult feelings, taking a moment for respite and relaxation is really valuable in order to move forward into the next piece, which is taking action, which we've mentioned already. And so starting from ourselves, and if you're thinking about concentric circles of influence. So we start from ourselves and what we can control in our own bodies and moving out to our own families, which also came out in an Earth Rangers research around, and Tova, you can, you know, add to this, but around children actually have a tremendous influence. And in particular, female children have a tremendous influence on parents. So having kids name their feelings and then begin to talk to their families around, you know, I'm feeling uncomfortable about insert something that's happening in our community. You know, I'm uncomfortable that my school doesn't have a lot of trees. And then having parents start to take action in their own communities to create change and maybe plant more trees, for example. And then looking to more broader networks of community. So Earth Rangers is a fantastic example of not only an individual kid and their family, but also that identity as Earth Ranger that I'm just one of, as Toba's explained, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids who have taken action, and I'm part of a network of a community of a movement, a social movement that's creating change for ourselves, coming back to those feelings. But also, why are we doing this? To make the world better, to make our impact as human beings on society, but also on ecology, on nature, on the global climate, to make change there as well.
Amazing. I love that idea of, because I know how valuable it is for me to feel a part of something and a part of a community of practice with other environmental educators or people writing educational programs. And then I imagine, I think back to maybe for me, maybe Tova with your tennis club or whatever, like having these, you know, my sports club or my girl guides, we called them brownies when you were younger. Anyway, I was an elf. I was a sprite.
And I was a sprite too.
Oh, and we always thought we were the coolest, you know, we thought we were like the sort of like rebellious ones. Possibly we were. I remember Snowy Owl, we had Snowy Owl and Brown Owl. I could go on forever. It's such an amazing group, but having those kind of groups, but now for that, just to be like, okay, this is great. We're learning skills. Again, we're building this sense of agency and of I matter. And even as a young person, my feelings matter, my actions matter, and I can make a difference. I feel like that's maybe more than I had access to in my childhood. Or if I think back on it, I feel like you're creating a space that is like accelerating that feeling. So that's amazing to me. Stephanie, do you have any other thoughts about sort of what eco-anxiety has meant for you and how it's sort of impacted on the work that you're doing and the way you frame what you do?
I think kind of like everyone, it kind of crept in a little bit over time. Like through various life experiences, I started observing things, and then, you know, little things lead to little things. I'm originally from Nova Scotia, but I lived in France for a number of years. And I remember arriving there. And of course, when you get to some new place, you see things differently. And one thing that really struck me was a very strong habit of drinking water, bottled water. Like everyone drank bottled water. And so everyone was buying packages of water, but the bottles of water were in plastic packaging. And there's just so much plastic and so much packaging everywhere. And, you know, maybe I was a little judgy. I thought, oh, look at all this plastic. But then I got to thinking of all those takeaway coffee cups I'd had over the years with those plastic lids. And, you know, you start recognizing stuff like this. And you start thinking, what have I done? What have I done? How have I contributed to this? What's been my role in all of this? And then in one of my previous positions, I was working with environmental studies students. And again, they started what we worked in. They were really things I hadn't thought about before. And all of that kind of led one thing to another. And I definitely got to that point where I thought, well, I can't even do anything. There's too much. It's too big. What am I going to do? What can I do? And fortunately, I came across people who were into action. And I realized for myself, action is so important, you know, being able to participate, do things at my level, and then be able to be part of Earth Rangers, to be able to bring this to help other people who have been in a similar situation themselves, and really all leading towards solving this problem. That's what it is for me. Mm.
It's huge. And just if it makes you feel a bit better, we used to drive from England, from the south of England, go in the Tunnel sous la Manche, in the Channel Tunnel, in a train where your car drives on underneath the English Channel to France to buy those multi-pack bottles of bottled water.
So because much water.
Very frequently as well. We had like a frequent flyer ticket and we got to travel. We got to experience the world. I'm so grateful for that. But it was so much cheaper than buying water in England. Everyone was terrified of the tap water. everyone thought that it was full of chlorine and it was full of chemicals and it was, you know, and if we look at bottled water, you know, if you've ever done a study, there's plenty of stuff in there as well. And it was like this thing, this accolade of French water coming from like, you know, underground, volcanic, very pure, full of minerals and stuff. You know, it's all the same stuff, really. But just so you know, and this is 2 decades ago, but you start to process as you become more aware, as you build knowledge. I don't remember who the quote is, and I'm probably going to ruin it, but it says, maybe it was Maya Angelou that said, before you know, you do what you do. And when you know better, you do better. So you just change your habits. And I've noticed now, I don't go back as frequently, but when I go back to the UK, I see very little people with reusable water bottles. So many people, it's just the standard to drink from plastic water bottles. And I always have a little rampage with anyone I meet, sort of tell them all the stories. And I guess we're all where we're at some point on a journey. And I do feel like if we can just build a system where people feel like they have access to being able to make choices and awareness of what they can do, then it sort of grows and magnifies and exponentially grows your feeling of capacity for what you can do.
And I think too, what has been said about children encouraging their parents to make change. I've both seen and heard that a lot. It's not all about plastic bottles of water, but so.
I've had those conversations, you know, I bought my parents recyclable water bottles. You do.
Two friends who stopped drinking bottled water because their kids kept saying, why are you using so much plastic? Two separate friends, two separate cities. But it goes to show, in another one, it was about yogurt containers. Why are we using so many yogurt containers? And so, you know, the parents said, you know, I just never really thought about that. So it's true that children can have such an impact on adults, and it's such an important thing to encourage.
I'm doing some awesome programming where we have, you know, we start to do waste-free lunches where the kids start making their own granola bars or whatever, or talk about what they can make and utilize that doesn't have anything that goes in the garbage, because we encourage them, they have to then deal with their garbage, you know, or whether they're composting or building those systems, just saying, like, to have awareness. And I know parents have a phenomenally difficult job balancing modern life, raising their children, jobs, everything. So it's not about putting emphasis there, but it's about just, yeah, letting that information trickle up. And a lot of kids, I feel like, you know, my nan used to tell me, she was like one of 12 and she would like make dinner at 6. They would make dinner. They were capable. So, you know, you can mix your own things. If you want to try that, you go for it. You know, it's a huge shift again, perhaps.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about just what's appropriate and compelling for kids. Age group, you know, in younger age groups, and how can they feel empowered and excited about what can be done? And we've been talking about plastic bottles. So we actually have at Earth Rangers a mission called the Water Taste Challenge. Lost it for a second. Play on the Pepsi Taste Challenge that you may remember. I'm dating myself, obviously, but basically the kids, they get like 2 pitchers that look the same. They put bottled water in one, tap water in one, and then try to kind of trick their parents or their friends or their neighbors into seeing if they can tell the difference. And so educational opportunity, it also makes a pretty powerful point, which is to the point you were making earlier, Jade, which is there literally is no difference. And then it makes the kids feel not only like they're making a difference, but that they're teaching adults something, which is also very important for that age group to feel like they know something that we don't, and they can show us, you know, how to be better in a way that's kind of fun and a little bit tricky. And so I think that those are the types of activities that can be really impactful.
Amazing. We did do one with the short shower challenge where we got the kids to time themselves and then their parents. And I do feel a bit bad. I think some of the parents were getting sort of, you know, very much told off for having a 6-minute shower instead of 5. And I thought, oh gosh, perhaps we're teaching them to really push back. But communication, I do a lot of debating with younger students, 10, 11 year olds, and teaching them. And I say to them, you know, if you can learn to articulate a point in a way that's non-emotional and non, you know, threatening, or and be able to give good evidence-based reasons why this, perhaps at some later point in life, you might be able to convince your father to let you go to the Eminem concert, which I failed at in my teens. I was really keen and I don't think I hadn't got my debating skills down pat. So, you know, and they look at me and say, oh, I don't know if this is blasphemy. I'd apologise. We are the Columbia Basin Environmental Education Network, or CBEEN. You can visit our website at cbeen.ca. We are the regional network for environmental education in the Columbia Basin, supporting a community of engaged and effective environmental educators by connecting them to resources, information, professional development, and networking opportunities. Okay, let's get back to eco-anxiety and professional development. So a lot of the things that we do in the store talk about, we have pedagogical resources, we have activity-based resources, and now I'm starting to see a lot, for me, a lot of these sort of, as you were talking about, Steffi, earlier, about like sort of connection to nature and a relationship with, which I think also really ties in, or is basically just a reawakening or relearning of Indigenous perspectives of relationship and reciprocity and gratitude as a basis for care and stewardship. But you guys created a training specifically for educators called From Eco-Anxiety to Eco-Action, Educator Strategies to Support Students. Does someone want to share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I can share a little bit about it. So like you said, eco-anxiety, it's a topic that we all know is important, but as educators, it can be tempting to kind of avoid it because it's also not something that's comfortable to talk about. It's not something that is easy to discuss. It's really complex. And so how do you go about dealing with that in the classroom? So the course that we developed, it's meant to be accessible to educators. So it's 5 weeks long, it's online. And we do have some Zoom sessions that are optional. And just recently, we had the first Zoom session from the current session. And it is so encouraging to see teachers who don't know each other from different areas. We have participants from Canada and from the US talking about the actions that they're involved in, what's going on in their school, and just to be able to have those discussions about what actions are being taken definitely helps with some of the solitude that you might have around what do I do? How do I deal with it? So the course is kind of separated into two parts. So the first part is more about eco-anxiety in general. So it enables the educator to kind of get a sense of where they are, how they feel about it, and how that impacts their teaching. And then the second part is more about children. How does it manifest in children? And what are some strategies to help them manage it? Of course, Erin mentioned this earlier. It's a very complex thing, anxiety. There's many, many different things that come into play, identities, communities, and not everyone has the same experience of anxiety. And so in this course, we're not able to really go into depth into those things, but it is something that's important to bear in mind. Educators themselves, but also when dealing with children, that you do have to be aware of all the diverse experiences. So yeah, the first part is really about where am I when it comes to eco-anxiety, where are my students? And then the second part is more focused on strategy. So what can be done? So outdoor learning and Indigenous land-based learning is part of it. Again, we're not Indigenous, so we're aware of our position with respect to that, but we do try and bring center voices and Indigenous resources to encourage. Yes, as a way to get out into nature. Also sharing stories of success. And I think that's something we've talked about here too. Children like to share their stories. And also for a child to hear another child's story is different than hearing an adult telling them a story. So seeing how children themselves are acting, what they've done. And ultimately empowering children to lead their own projects. Mm. So not to do something that we say, okay, you have to do this. You have to go clean up the playground because that's what we do and go pick up your garbage, but to have the students come up with their own project. And so it's a different motivation behind the project and that definitely impacts the way that they act differently. So that's kind of what goes on in the course. And it's really rich. At the end, participants give suggestions of projects. And there's been lots of different projects. Again, it's very different depending on if it's an urban context or if it's a rural context. And I think one thing that we can all get caught up in is thinking our projects have to be these earth-shattering, huge projects that completely change everything. But, you know, and we've mentioned this during this discussion that little projects make a difference. It doesn't have to be this large-scale, you know, incredible project. Those are great. I mean, there's no harm in having some of those, but especially, I mean, within a school context, everyone has access to different things, to different resources. So what can be done in the context where we are?
That sounds amazing. And for me, this is one of the greatest things about the virtual space development that's happened since pandemic, in that you can get these really varied and rich within one space now, whereas we used to host these very localized workshops or professional development opportunities, and you're only hanging out with people that have the same sort of space as you. And whilst place-based is obviously you need it to suit where you are, having that different perspective and is can be such an amazing way to make people feel connected and uplifted. Are there any other resources, Erin, that you have at Earth Rangers that could support educators or parents or just anyone interested in sort of conservation to sort of deepen their practice?
Well, I mean, I think along with what Earth Rangers is doing, there are some other phenomenal organizations out there doing similar or, you know, slightly different or, you know, more targeted types of work connected to eco-anxiety. So Learning for Sustainable Futures is one organization that's also national. There's also Climate Change Action Network, which is more of like a hub, similar to what, you know, what you folks are doing at Outdoor Learning Store. And then that you also might look to, folks can look to, like if they have specific interest areas, like food security related to climate change action. There are, you know, very much localized organizations doing that kind of work. There's an organization called Fashion Takes Action. So if you're really interested in fashion, but you really want to look at it from a sustainability perspective, you can look to Fashion Takes Action to engage with that discussion and action from, you know, looking at alternative modes of creating clothing or repurposing our clothing and so on. So yeah, I think it's just maybe decide, like helping kids and families decide what their interest area is. Maybe it's a nature conservation approach. So come to Earth Rangers, but you know, look to whatever else is out there too in your local communities.
I love that because students really do have those passions and being able to connect it. And it does. This is the biggest thing, is that because of the way our Earth is one big series of interconnected systems, once that awareness kicks in, you can start to do it. I do a fun thing with kids where they check the labels of the person sitting next to them, and like, okay, so what's your material made of? Where was it manufactured? But where do you think the cotton was actually grown? And we start to look, draw these lines of emissions of how much effort has gone in for that to end up them wearing it that day, or taking t-shirts and making shopping bags as a gift for their family members, you know, instead of it going into a landfill. So I feel like there is an amazing amount of work. You guys also did an Anxious for Action, like a parent guide, right? About eco-anxiety.
Yeah. So the course that Stephanie was describing and the parent guide are both based off of the same research study, but the parent guide, it just gives a different kind of context. So, you know, I think this goes for educators and parents, but just in general, a lot of adults feel like they're in a position where they aren't equipped to talk about the environment. So if there's a wildfire or a flood or a hurricane that's dominating the news, and maybe they should be actually instigating a conversation with their child about what's going on and why and what we can do about it. But rather than do that, they might be more likely to avoid it because they just don't feel like they have the tools and the experience to deal with whatever emotions their child might express. And so both the course and the parent guide are really meant to alleviate some of that anxiety about talking about anxiety that adults might feel, and give them some really kind of easy to use tools. You know, I was thinking about something that came up earlier in our conversation, just about naming things. I think, Erin, you were talking about that. And one of the things that has helped me personally is, you know, eco-anxiety is actually like quite a broad term. There, you can get really specific about, you know, eco-fatalism, eco-paralysis, eco-guilt. You know, like there's so many different feelings we have. Eco-paralysis in particular has kind of resonated with me. And I feel like it's come up a few times, you know, in this conversation on the peripheral, of just like, you're feeling like you're operating within a system where you aren't able to make the right decision. Like where, you know, you're deciding between getting on a plane, which is obviously comes with a lot of emissions, or not visiting your parents who live in another country. Like, what is the right decision? And just knowing that other people are having those feelings, and that we're all, I think, like as a society, trying to navigate like how we can move forward in a responsible way while also being able to like live our lives and enjoy ourselves, and that like parents adults are dealing with also, which makes it hard to imagine talking to your children about it. You don't want them to feel that way. So you kind of want to tamp it down within yourself. So understanding your own feelings and kind of coming to grips with them, I think is just like a critical part of being able to talk to kids about it in a way that is, you know, effective and that helps them to deal with their feelings as well. And telling your kids that you are also concerned validates their feelings. Like if we tell our kids not to worry about something, then they start to think that there's something wrong with them for worrying about it. Instead, we're saying, you know, it's okay to be worried about this. I'm worried about it too, but here's what we can do about it. And a lot of those types of things are what you'll find in the parent guide, in the course, is just kind of thinking about things a little bit differently.
I feel like that's a really beautiful way to come to the almost the close of this, because I thank you for doing that. I think it's very hard to be vulnerable and to talk about some of these more difficult topics. And just as you touched on it, to be a person who would love to, you know, long haul flight all the time and see my family, but who I do make choices based on my relationship with the earth. We all make sacrifices, but also not forcing your children to feel like they can't have things. It's so complex. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the work that I see, and this for me ties into the health and well-being of educators and the students and of all humans, is of that time outside, the sitting with feelings, the being peaceful, the just spending time connecting. Also, is just this amazing framework for creating a place of goodness to move forward from, and starting with a positive mental attitude.
Stoked on Science, providing engaging, educational and fun programs across the Columbia Basin. Is your school or organization looking to develop your environmental programming, connect your outdoor time more deeply to the curriculum, or engage your students or teachers with unique programs that go beyond the basic science topics, like delving into the history of the Earth, how it's changed and where it's going? If so, visit www.stokedonscience.com to connect for environmental education consulting or to book programs for your K-12 and adult professional development courses.
I'm so impressed at the work you're doing. Your resources are phenomenal. There's a podcast, there's lots of kid stuff that's really engaging. Then you're supporting the people that are helping them to make decisions and are also facilitating a two-way relationship of learning. And so I think it's amazing. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share about Earth Rangers or some fun things you've got coming up or your website?
Well, definitely visit our website. Or if you have kids, you can have them download the app and get their free membership. I think Stephanie mentioned our educator specific website, which is homeroom.earthrangers.com. So if you just Google Earth Rangers, you'll find all of our stuff, and we hope that you will. And just thank you so much, Jade, for having us. We're always happy to talk about this subject because it's so important.
Absolutely. And if you haven't read the research report, it's a really good read for sort of basing some understanding about how people feel about what's going on, and knowing that if you do have any negative or anxious feelings, you're not alone, and there is a community of people out there to support you. I'm going to say thank you so much. In the language of the Sinaites, we say lim limt. For the Shkwepwik, it's kukstjam or tanaha hususukini. I'm so grateful that you joined me today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you in an Earth Rangers homeroom soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for this month's Earthy Chat. You can find the resources featured in this podcast at the Outdoor Learning Store. That's www.outdoorlearningstore.ca. You can also visit greenteacher.com for incredible educational resources and webinars, and cbeen at cbeen.org for a range of environmental resources, including professional development opportunities, grant information, and green jobs. Lastly, you can visit www.stokedonscience.com to chat with me, Jade, about science workshops or educational consulting. Tune in next month for more cross-pollination of ideas and another fun, earthy chat.
Hey, it's Ian. Sorry I missed that episode. I will be back for the next. You know those really annoying ads on podcasts where people ask for reviews and star ratings? Well, that's basically what I'm doing right now. Seriously, they do help. It drives traffic. And of course, it spreads the word about best practices in outdoor and environmental education. So if you do have a moment, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review on your favorite podcast app.